Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this dear land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert, spare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Delta, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Denver, Panama, Madama, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, South, Nora, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Farisola, Anthropilla, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert, bear, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, and a moderate.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice radio show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It's March 1st, Thursday night at 9 p.m., and it's time for the Jumbo Justice radio show, and you're listening on Blog Talk Radio. I'll comment more about that in just a moment. Audrey, thank you very much for getting us started. Emily and Mike, thank you for preparing some research for us tonight, and we hope to be talking with you a little bit later if we don't get too busy, but I think we might on this show tonight. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash, of course. Keep on trucking up there. Got the good Lord driving for you, so you'll do fine. Let me mention tonight right off what our show is going to be about, and we'll get our guests on in just a few moments here. It's going to be about offender reentry, and two of our guests are going to be coming back from last week, and they did a wonderful job telling us about the functions and mission of the National Association of Blacks in Criminal Justice. And tonight they're going to be talking about something that I believe Ohio Almost wrote the book on, and these folks are very much involved in it. It's offender reentry. And we'll get into the technical aspects of that like we always do on the Jumbo Justice radio show, and we'll see how it matches up with parole and some of these other post-release kinds of things. And very exciting concept, and Ohio's indeed a leader in that area, and we'll learn a lot tonight. About the show, our purpose is to discuss news and events and issues and developments in the difficult field of criminal justice. Sometimes it's humorous, sometimes it's sad, and we certainly are sympathetic and empathetic to the family of the Toledo police officer that was killed this past week. In fact, I listened to that funeral live on WSPD 1370 AM, and it's indeed a sad affair. Toledo's, I suppose you could say, has been fortunate. They've not had a police officer killed since, I believe, 1970. But a tragic case, a young person involved in this, and we'll have to see how this all turns out in the long run. This show is dedicated to the tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and throughout the world. And what we do on this show is something different, I think, from what else I see on Blog Talk Radio. We get into the technical and professional side of criminal justice practice. And for those who have an interest in that, they've tuned into the right place. If you're looking for a little more entertainment, maybe this isn't the one, but we certainly enjoy all these guests that have come on and talked with us. Let me comment a minute, as I do always. I'm always opening the invitation for Blog Talk Radio. It's a leading-edge technology. Alan Levy is the chief executive officer of Blog Talk Radio, and you now have hundreds and hundreds of shows. And if you look on the Blog Talk Radio main site, blogtalkradio.com, you'll see some of those featured shows listed there that have advertising and really push the show. And you'll right away you'll know the names of celebrities and politicians and all sorts of folks. And you're, of course, welcome to listen to those shows. But here's what's possible. You can, any person or interest group or organization, from, glass blowing to auto repair to some political needs and issues, you can have your own Blog Talk Radio show. That doesn't sound like much, but think about it. You can broadcast live on the Internet in streaming audio, and it goes worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. I need to say that again, probably. Streaming on the Internet, free for you, live, and you can go to an unlimited number of listeners all over the world. That is really something. And you can do at least 14 hours a week, and I suspect you can actually do more than that. There are some people on Blog Talk Radio who run sort of sales pitches, and they're selling products and services and that type of thing, and they're literally on every day with some type of show. And as I'm fond of saying, I love Cheez-Its, so I noticed on the back of the box it says, get your own box. On Blog Talk Radio, if you're not satisfied with what you're listening to, you can get your own show. Let me mention a couple things about shows coming up. We've all but arranged it, and he's volunteered to do it. So we're going to have a show on March 8th about investigative hypnosis, and Joe Niehaus from the Kettering Police Department will be the guest on that show. And he's written a book about that whole area, and, of course, has practiced that. So it's a fascinating area if you never heard anyone talk about it, and Joe will be someone that knows a lot about it. Then on March 15, we're going to do our first remote broadcast, and that's going to be from the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meeting in Seattle, Washington. And I'll be there presenting a jointly written paper on the Romanian private security system, which is really something. And then we'll be broadcasting with some other authors and folks that will be attending that meeting. This will be more than 3,000 people in attendance. There will be probably 1,100 to 1,200 papers presented on every subject imaginable. And I imagine there might be a few on the subject for tonight, reentry. But if you want sort of a revival about what's going on in criminal justice, the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences is the place to go, because what's the papers today or the articles tomorrow and the book chapters later in the book. So it's really a place to get revived and refreshed on the whole subject. Tonight I'll do what I usually do, is comment on some news items. I want to be brief about it. In fact, I'm going to bring in our guest to comment, since a couple of my news articles have to do with corrections issues. And then listeners are welcome to call in. I know people sometimes are reluctant to do that. They've told me they've been listening, but they don't call in. But we do have callers, and you call in at 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. What you do as a listener, you can call in on your computer or you can listen on your computer with Windows Media Player. And you can call in by phone, that's landline, cell phone, Skype service if you have that, and you have the number so we can work from there. I can hold five calls at a time, and as I click you on my switchboard, all five of us can talk to each other at the same time, which makes it real nice. Audrey, I'm going to wait till later on the show. She started this blonde jokes about she is a blonde. About 2-3 weeks ago, and she's got another one tonight, and she's just dying to tell you this joke. I think I'm going to hold back on a little bit. Audrey, would you remind me later on, perhaps near the end of the show, we'll go with your joke. But it's going to be hard to top that one that you had about the electrocution. I thought that one was really a funny one. Let's be sure that we hear this before we get started. I love this advertisement.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
I love that public service announcement, and I hope every criminal and every gang member in the state of Ohio gets to hear that. I guess that's what that announcement is directed toward, are those folks who are out carrying guns and committing crimes. But most of you know, on March 15th, unless something happens, Ohio's concealed carry law changes, and we've done a whole show on that subject, that people who have a right to carry a concealed weapon have gone through the background checks and the training and passed all the other qualifications, then they can finally carry a concealed handgun in their car in a sensible way. I won't go into details, but Ohio's law is kind of complicated compared to some of the other states in regard to carrying a firearm inside of the vehicle. But that's subject to, or it will change on March 15, and the governor has already approved that. I'm going to bring on our guests here and let them comment on some of our news stories with me before we get into the subject of reentry. Let's do what we do a lot on Blog Talk Radio and say, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello.
Yes, hello.
Is this Andrea?
No, this is Yvonne Pointer.
Okay, Yvonne. Okay, I saw your name in some communications. We're very glad to have you on the show tonight. And exactly where are you from, Yvonne?
I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, and what, you're working with the Ohio Department of Rehab and Corrections, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. What do you do with them?
Well, actually, I speak at some of the conferences. My 14-year-old daughter was raped and murdered, so I speak from the perspective of a victim.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly be chatting with you here in just a moment. Can you hold on a second while I click on, see if we can get Jeff on here, too?
Okay.
Here.
Is this Jeff?
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Oh, thank you very much, Jeff. How's everything going? Way?
Say again?
Is everything doing well in the Columbus area tonight?
Oh, yeah. Everything, just the rain coming down, and we're having a good time trying to figure out how many inches we're going to get.
You know, I've been asking people if they can remember what sunshine looks like up here.
Yeah.
Up here in the Gray Bowl, we have no such thing. I'm almost going to go get a sun lamp and put it on.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Little news here. How about this one? Now, this is serious business to me, and Vaughn, you can comment if you like. You know, Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, you know, when you're a prince, you don't have a lot to do, right?
Right.
Or else you got a lot to do that may not be as important as some things other people are doing, like you folks that work in the corrections field. But the prince has declared war against the Big Mac. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that.
He's into this healthy eating thing, and he's waging war against the Big Mac. He wants McDonald's to remove this, and I'm here to tell you that the only proper response to this is a declaration of war.
Wow.
And if he goes, you know, if my fingers were on the missiles tonight, the button, I would have already launched them. And then I can tell you this, if he takes on Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, greasy, drippy, good-tasting Kentucky Fried Chicken, then I think we need to go nuclear. but anyway, I believe that, you know, doesn't have anything, to, you know, else to do with that. Okay, how about this story, Jeff and Yvonne? Colorado, I just picked this up off of my little self-made newspaper on the Internet. Colorado farmers are probably going to use prison inmates to fill the void left by the immigration crackdown in the state of Colorado. Colorado's been real hard knocking down employers and taking into custody illegal immigrants that have been working in the fields. And two vegetable farmers have actually requested from the prison system that they would like to have 20 workers, and they're going to pay them $9.60 an hour. And that's more than they paid the migrant workers, by the way.
Wow.
And
wow.
They're going to put them right to work. And Colorado says they're going to go along with it and get started. And if it works out well, they'll provide the opportunity for other folks inside the institution. Is that a good idea?
Jeff, I'll let you handle that one.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not sure about the wages. That's always something that's in debate. But you got to figure that people have to be able to learn how to survive and work if they're going to stay out of prison. So someone's got to give them a job, and they have to have a skill, you know, to be able to support their family after all. So some do think that the way out of their situation would be to commit crimes to support their families. That's what one would propose anyway. But at the same time, all people to have a self-worth of one of something has to be able to survive and to work. So maybe that will instill a work ethic. I'm not sure, you know, I can't get into the wages and things like that, but certainly if you're going to work someone that's incarcerated, you ought to pay them. If not, then some people would consider that slave labor.
Would you think that they're going to, will they be able to keep that 960, do you think, or all of it, or would they deduct something?
The better thing to do is to make sure that they're able to pay their bills of incarceration. There are some concepts that believe that individuals who make money have to pay their child support, the medical support for medication when they go to visit the sick infirmary, what they call. So there, I would say that some of those things will be taken into effect, but certainly they would be able to keep a portion of it. In fact, most correctional agencies do have similar programs as that. You know, they have the Ohio penal industry in the state of Ohio, where offenders learn how to fix cars and things like that, because it is a fact that if someone can work to support themselves, they have a lesser chance of recidivism.
I would have a concern from the other perspective is that what type of security would they have while the inmates were working in the field? What type of inmates they would select, how are they going to select them? For example, if they decided that anyone can do it and then you had a onset of rapists and murderers running around in the field, what security or what way would they provide the people in the surrounding communities that these people would not escape and do them bodily harm?
How do you think, Jeff or Yvonne, how do you think that would be screened out here in Ohio? What would we do?
Well, in Ohio, they have a security system, as in most prisons, and then most of the offenders that work outside of the fence, which, of course, a lot of people don't know, but the offenders, they work the grounds of the state, the governor's mansion. You know, that's who cuts the grass and manicures the lawn and things like that. So we get those nonviolent offenders to do those type of things. And they have a security classification. Most of them are level 1A, what we call them. We used to call them minimum security.
It says here in Colorado, which I'm sure is the same in Ohio and many other states, that they grow flowers now and sell flowers already. This is all done internally. They raise bees. I thought I read last week that we're running out of bees. Is that right? maybe they're on to something here.
Another thing it does, it also proves that they have some intelligence and that they are capable of given an opportunity to provide income for themselves and their families. And it's unfortunate that they have to learn that trade while they're incarcerated. But nevertheless, as Jeff said, when they are released, possibly that can lead to gainful employment.
You know what the third thing here in Colorado, it says that they do internally? They cultivate wine grapes.
Oh, no. That's kind of interesting. I don't think we do that in Ohio.
What do you do?
They have this thing called hooch, or some people call it H-O-O-C-H, which is homemade wine, some mixture of fruits and grapes mixed with yeast, and that can cause a problem, you know. But, of course, you know, if they're not having problems like that in the prison system, then they would at least try it.
Well, let me ask you about this one. I'm sure you've heard. It's been on the radio all over the place, and lots of news stories about it, and I think the governor says he's for it. What about special license plates for sex offenders?
That would work if all sex offenders drove cars.
says here that lawmakers in Ohio said on Wednesday want to force convicted sex offenders to use fluorescent green license plates on their cars so they can be easily identified, and the governor will sign it.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple, you know, most people believe that sex offenders, number one, can't be rehabilitated, no matter what the programming. But at the same time, how do you expect those individuals, if they're not serving a lifetime sentence, to get out and make a productive life? There's, you know, I have mixed feelings about it, of course, as a professional and a person that would like to see children protected in society. And that would be an ethical and a moral dilemma for me. But at the same time, if that were the law, then that were the law. Then, you know, that would be the law, and I would have to comply with it.
Well, as a mother of a rape victim, my daughter was 14 years old when she was abducted and raped. Clearly, I would like to have some type of identification of a sexual offender or a rapist or murderer prior to them actually committing the crime. I don't know if the license plates would do it or not. I believe that her perpetrator was on foot, but I'm all for any type of identification that we could recognize these individuals prior to the actual crime, and thereby maybe we can, diminish some of these acts against our children.
I just have one article about this here on my desk, but I heard on public radio this morning that they are talking about the ones that fit in the category of predator. How is that? What's our ranking of sex offenders here in Ohio? How's that work?
Oh, sexual predators would be, I don't have the exact definition, but just working in the field, sexual predators would be those individuals that would commit crimes that I can give some examples. They're actually cited in the Ohio Revised Code, but some examples may be a chronic pedophile, or it could be a pedophile. It could be someone that committed a serious rape with some harm, and they would be labeled as a predator, sexual predator, and they would be required to register with the sheriff's department. And actually, you can go on the website and kind of look around. You can type in your zip code, find out if someone's around, that lives around your zip code. But a lot of problems are that some of the offenders, because of the different rules that are prohibit them from living in certain areas near school, nurseries, and things, a lot of them become homeless. And homeless, as defined by HUD, is getting out of prison without a permanent address. So the choice would be for society would be, do you want a person to not have an address, or do you want someone to be able to find that person if they had to supervise them and monitor their activities? Now, there are some people that believe that sex offenders should have braces on their, some type of radio or GPS system so that all their movements could be tracked either in real time or other time. So that's another notion of this going around.
Of course, the counter-argument in the article is that this will just identify them and it'll make them subject to vigilante justice. And I can imagine parking their car in a movie theater lot or something and people know what that plate's for.
I would say that in most cases, if they go on the Internet, they can find out who those individuals are, and there doesn't appear to be a lot of vigilante acts at this time.
If they had the license plate that was neon, certainly the vigilante effect might increase, even if they were driving down the street,
It's a tough issue. I have a student in class this semester. In fact, she counsels sex offenders, and she's doing her research project on the problems of them being released and locating and registering and the housing and all that business, and that's a real area of need, I'm sure. So complicated. You folks in the professional corrections field figure all that out for us. One more comment on a story, and then we'll go to this business of reentry. Have you heard about the case that the Supreme Court ignored this week where the guy got the 200-year prison term for having 20 pictures of child porn? they were some really rough pictures of, you know, adults doing terrible things to children. But he got 10 years on each pick, so a total of 200 years.
Wow.
And the attorney, of course, says this is excessive and abusive and all that, but that's what the Arizona law was. And, yeah, I'm joking, but I'm saying, hey, it wasn't life, right?
Yeah. Well, Arizona's pretty tough. I mean, they have a tough system. They have a couple of the sheriff there in a county that's very controversial, but he makes Hispanic inmates learn how to speak English, and he's very controversial, but at the same time, you know, they have to comply with the law, and each state is given the ability to come up with their own system of justice, especially since the guidelines have been kind of thrown out.
You know that this guy is a 52-year-old high school teacher. I guess that's better than a grade school teacher. But,
wow.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. That he would even, number one, indulge in those type things in that type of a profession, and we would put our trust in him because, after all, teachers often spend more time with our kids than we do.
I would be very interested in, you mentioned someone who's studying the minds and on sexual offenders. I would be very interested in understanding from them what is their motivation. It is very apparent to me and obvious that it is a detrimental sickness and a disease, because who in their right mind, what adult in their right mind would want to have sex with a child? I think they're sick past anything that we can imagine in this society.
Well, then you get into, you know, crime theory, and, boy, there are many of those as there are crimes.
Right.
And if anybody really had a handle on that, I guess we'd be shutting down our prisons. But, yeah, it's a very complicated thing, Yvonne, and I hope someday we're able to solve it. And, you know, we've tried a lot of things with sex offenders, and, you know, some of them are they run from the flasher, who the last thing they want to do is ever have any contact with somebody.
Right.
Brutal murderers who go out and rape and kill children. One of the things that was interesting about this case is the prosecutor actually went with these 20 pictures in order to save the jury from seeing the hundreds that he had. And I guess some of them were just terrible. I don't know, as bad as you could get. But what a world we live in, right?
Yeah, and even in the paper, in recent days, we've had state employees in various agencies who have been investigated for having porn on their state computer, which is a no-no. I think in ODOT, they had a couple articles there on the ODOT, Ohio Department of Transportation. And
start there with an IQ test, right?
Even though they're state employees and they haven't been convicted, it's still a point that they would have porn on their computer. And That seems to be a societal thing that we have to deal with, and it keeps coming up.
You know, every since
the Larry Flynn down in, well, you know, the hustler guy down in Cincinnati on up.
I know him.
Well, and it goes back to my point, the mental status of these individuals, because I just don't believe that a person would, in their right mind, would want to jeopardize their job, jeopardize their future, just for a few minutes thrill of porn on the state computer. It is obviously something very sick about the individual.
Yep. We have another caller. Could you folks hold on a second, and we'll click them on? Let them join us. Hello.
All right.
Hello.
Who's online?
Hi, my name is Karen. I'm calling out of Ohio.
Okay.
I have actually a couple topics to bring into the table, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, and then we're going to get reentry.
Okay, that's actually one of the topics that piqued my interest. In June of 2004, I was going through a very volatile divorce in Hamilton County, which is Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes.
And in order to gain custody of my children, my husband was told by his attorney to accuse me of something called domestic violence, which is violence against the spouse or anyone within the home.
Mm-hmm.
And to include in that I had in some way intimated or threatened my children in this. This took place in a community called Norwood. He actually followed through on the action, and I was put in jail with no prior criminal history, and that includes speeding tickets. Good citizen, voter, college educated, for 6 months. Since my release in December of 2004 with a master's degree, I have been unable to be employed from places as menial paying as Waffle House to General Electric. My question is, when you re-enter your offenders, and I'm assuming you deal basically more with prisons than you do, say, county facilities, do you make them aware that employers have a standard policy in place now that if you are convicted of any type of violence offense, be it felony or misdemeanor, and mine was a misdemeanor, that you are not, absolutely not eligible for hire within a company unless you are 5 years post-conviction with no other convictions?
Jeff, what about that?
There are different. Now, of course, I can't speak for all employers because I'm not an employer. But at the same time, I am aware of that the whole concept of reentry is the process of leaving prison or jail and returning to society. Prison system and the jail system, oftentimes, they're the holder and they're made responsible for some of the things that take place. But there are some companies that do hire ex-offenders. In fact, in the state of Ohio, for the Department of Corrections, we actually have hired some ex-offenders. Now, the whole key word is what type of offense, what type or category of offense would occur. But there are instances where some ex-offenders have barbering license, that they have a counseling license. I am aware of many ex-offenders having their substance abuse license and able to work with ODATIS and with the Department of Corrections and work with UMADA. I don't know if you're aware, some of these ODATIS, UMADA, or substance abuse agencies. So it is difficult for just a normal individual, any individual, to get a job, but it's certainly not impossible.
Well, sir, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you. After 2.5 years of putting out over 5,700 resumes and walking personally into business, and from my appearance, you would never think in a million years that I had ever seen the inside of a jail system. I respectfully disagree, because I believe that you're misleading, just like I feel that I was really misled, perhaps not purely by deceitful tactics, but more by maybe just ignorance within that jail system of being told, hey, you're here, you're paying your debt to society, you're not a criminal, you didn't do this, we all understand this, just do your time. I did my time. I got out early, as a matter of fact, because it was a model inmate. But the fact remains is, over a divorce, my whole life has been taken. In return, they also took my children and gave them to my husband, who proceeded to take them and run out of state with them, kidnap them. And I still haven't heard anything from him. The courts are looking for him. And if you don't mind me saying, sir, with all due respect, I really think this show tonight is a terrific topic, but I think you needed to hear from an offender side. Somebody who's still supposed to pay child support but can't get a job. Somebody who's looking at recidivism because they can't find employment and pay their child support. Sir, I was never offered one single bit of help. I am now being forced to consider going on disability, which, listen to me closely, I am not disabled at all, mentally, physically, nothing. There is nothing that keeps me from working. So I find it a little bothersome when you make it seem like, oh, well, you go in, you do your time, you get out, life goes on. That's a lie. It's simply not accurate.
I don't think that is what he said. What I heard him say is that he does know instances where inmates have received employment. And I don't think I heard him say that that is not the truth.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I've known lots of folks. In fact, these people know from last week that I've worked in university where we had 25 ex-offenders in our program for like 6 years. And they were studying a degree program. And it was tough to go get a job. I mean, I've been in the office in both Ohio and Texas, and they've cried and all sorts of things. And one guy lost his job when he was fine. He finally decided to lie about his record and got a job with the Home Depot. And then like 7 months later, he had been promoted and everything. They found out about it. They fired him. But
that was a great temptation for me. It really was, Mr. Haley. It was a great temptation. Because at one point, I went into a telemarketing company to make $6.20 an hour. They escorted me out the back door with security because that was their, quote-unquote, company policy. Do you have any idea how inhumane and degrading that is?
Imagine, certainly.
And that was in Fairborn, Ohio. And, I mean, you talk about just absolutely devastating to your psyche. I've had all my worldly possessions, my children, which were my most precious thing in my life, taken from me. And I just...
Jeff, what's the expungement like? What's she taking?
Oh, my goodness. In the state of Ohio, expungement is... that's a very hot topic. Actually, I support reviewing the expungement laws, but it's very difficult when you have a blend of politics where there is no agreement to at least look at the expungement rules. I mean, I know instances where people maybe smoked a marijuana joint in the 70s and it's still held against them for certain jobs. I'm not promoting at all that those things are fair. Certainly, I did say against.
I'm not going to call out their names, but you know people, and Dr. Collins, he's employed people in the probation department as probation that have felony records.
Yeah, and I don't think Rashawn Wilson, which was a student of yours and a fraternity brother of mine, he works for the county probation for Franklin County. He's an exceptional young man, but at the same time, he applied for the Department of Corrections, and I vouched for him, and he got another job offer. So, but there are instances where individuals are frustrated, and I wouldn't suggest that. But at the same time, there are other individuals who have decided to start their own job. I'm aware of. Have you been through Community Connections?
What I decided to do was I had two choices, basically get busy living or get busy dying.
Right.
And sometimes the Lord, however your beliefs may be, will put you in a position to show you what you're really made of. So I just decided to go ahead and start doing freelance writing work. I've also recently been given a radio show to where I get to talk about these topics, although I try not to do it to ad nauseum.
Yes.
But, I've gotten involved with a political party, the Libertarian Party, and be getting more and more exposure. Ideally, my situation would only be resolved if I were to go in front of the Ohio State Supreme Court and they were to expunge my record and basically grant me clemency. The state of Ohio at this time does not even listen to anyone who's been accused, convicted of domestic violence. It's not fair, but life isn't fair now, is it?
I would like to at least suggest that I do know people that have been convicted of domestic violence under this new rule, and I don't necessarily agree with their conviction especially with the children and things and whoever calls first. But I am aware that they've become nurses and they're employed.
I was told, given a piece of paper by the court, I'm not allowed to go into health care. I'm never allowed to own a gun, which is not an issue. I don't like them. And I can't work in corrections. I can't work for the county. I can't be in any position where I give any kind of care to children as far as daycares or anything of that nature.
I wouldn't be able to respond on that, but what I'm but I am saying that a friend of mine, a very good friend, and I'll say her name is Tina. And that's her real first name. She was disciplined her son, and she was actually arrested for domestic violence. And she is a health care worker, and she is around adults and children. Of course, she works at most of the nursing homes and things like that, but she doesn't have the same restriction as you have. But I don't know your particular case, and I would never try to say, what should happen or shouldn't happen unless I looked at an individual case or you went to an attorney and I had some type of advice. But I am aware of individuals who have domestic violences. And it is true that they do have restrictions with weapons and ammunition and things like that, but I'm also aware that there are other professions that permit people with a background to work. Janitorial services. In fact, at the State of Ohio Correctional Facility, an ex-offender has a contract to clean up the buildings that we work in. We've hired ex-offenders to be boiler operators. In the 1970s, we used to hire ex-offenders to be parole aides. And we even now, we have one ex-offender I can think of as a substance abuse administrator located in Lorain. But I'm not saying that everybody's going to get a job doing those same types of things, but at least it's something that you can look at. And I'll give you my email and telephone number. You can give me a call, and we can try to...
That would be terrific. Any help that I could get at this point, I would be glad to take, because having to file for disability when I'm not disabled is beyond a lie that I can't do that. I cannot lie and make a false claim. I will not do that against people who genuinely need that kind of help.
Right. And I can tell you, being the past president of National Association of Blacks and Criminal Justice, which includes all people, we have had ex-offender panels at our conferences, and Yvonne has been involved, very much so involved with that. She has introduced us to ex-offenders who have written poetry, drawn art. One of the guys that's one of the top rap artists now, his name is Life Jennings. He came out of the Mansfield prison, and he decided to go into his own business singing. So sometimes the option may be to go into your own business just like you did, and I commend you on that. In fact, right now I'm currently working on a project to form a formerly incarcerated person's coalition. Professor Haley, I actually wrote that under you and Butch Hanyati, and we had to wait till some things settle down on the job. But I am meeting with a group of ex-offenders, and we're discussing these very issues, right now, and they're all ex-offenders.
I wanted to say, too, that I went to a workshop at one of the conferences there in Columbus, and one of the workshops was entitled Nelson Mandela Was an Inmate. And so I thought that was very interesting that someone who served 27 years in prison turned out to be the president.
Well, can you pass on your email then to Karen, and then we'll get into reentry here a little bit with the remaining time, and I want to hear Yvonne.
Yes, I'm sorry I took up so much of your time for your show, Mr. Haley.
I actually think that was a good way to start. But my number, I'll give you my telephone number. You can give me a call tomorrow.
Thank you.
My telephone number is 614.
Yes, sir.
452.
Yes, sir.
0469, and my office number is 614-644-5029, and I work for the Office of Policy and Offender Reentry.
And that's the Office of Offender Reentry?
Right, a Policy and Offender Reentry. Now, of course, I work mainly, in this new project that I'm working on, I'm working with a lot of individuals that are just ex-offenders, so it doesn't matter if they were in the county jail or if they were in prison. But it's not actually complete yet, but it's a work in progress. You'll be able to meet other individuals and share information and success stories, as well as some job tips in the areas that you're working in. I do have some people that I'm working with in Dayton, Cincinnati, Toledo, Akron, Columbus, all around the state.
Well, I thank you very much for your help and for even taking time out to speak with me this evening. And I just had one other little quick thing before I left.
Okay.
Listening to Yvonne talk about the fluorescent license plate for sex offenders, having a child murdered, I don't think as a mother there is a strong enough punishment for someone who does that. And I understand all the politics behind it, the defamation, the invasion of privacy issues. But there's a part of me that if they want to give these license plates out, it should be to chronic offenders. Once they have violated a child and violated people to this degree, what rights really should they have in the public forum? And that's it. I'm passionate about the pedophilia thing. Hate pedophiles, unfortunately. But thank you very much.
I'm certainly in agreement with that. However, we have to also remember two things. Number one, that a lot of these individuals are not revealed. In my daughter's case, her homicide is 22 years old, and there is no one that has ever been apprehended for that.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Walking around, even though I do a lot of work in the community, a lot of work with prisons, I could very well be speaking to the person that murdered my daughter because he is unidentifiable at this time. And number two, I still want to believe that as long as there's life, there's hope for individuals, and I don't want to put a label on a person and then say that there's no hope for them ever because I am not the person that condemns them. Now, a lot of times when I go into prisons and the inmates are the ones, and Jeff can attest to this, that actually invite me to come because I don't go in criticizing. We're trying to find a way to make this world a better place, and that begins with one individual at a time. So if I go in with the mindset that there's no hope for them, then my going is in vain. I just have to keep believing that it is hope as long as there's life.
Thank you, Yvonne. You're a real inspiration.
Well, God is good.
Yeah, I would like to say that Yvonne has a book, and I have purchased several copies to give out to people, and she's a great motivational speaker and a very dear friend of mine and a Point of Life recipient. And Yvonne is very serious about this thing. In fact, when I met her, I was so touched and moved by her testimony of being able to forgive. I mean, because I have not gone through the same thing that she's gone through, but I have watched her work since we have met. And
we met inside a prison.
Yes.
I was speaking to 2,000 inmates. I mean, we were on the open field at the Marion. Was it Marion?
North Central.
And so my message to them is the same as the message to anyone that has breath in their body, and that is as long as there's life, there's hope. I don't want anyone that is bound by this demon and this disease of child molestation to feel like there is no hope for them. There is hope. We just had those who of us have our right minds have to try to find out what that hope looks like. Otherwise, I feel sorry for all of us.
You know, I've been
thank you very much to all three of you for allowing me to participate in
your
show. Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Take care.
Thank you, Karen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jeff, what are the structural elements of offender reentry? And Yvonne gets to tell us what she wanted to tell us.
Well, the whole idea, again, of reentry is the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction is one of two agencies that still keep that name. And, of course, before the 1970s, we were actually under mental health because of you knowing that a lot of times we think that people have a mental health concern if they commit a crime, but we know that's not necessarily true in all cases. And sooner or later, we became our own department, and we kept the name Rehabilitation and Correction. So this reentry thing, rehabilitation, kind of indicates that one can restore one back to what they were, but they may not be a place, you know, it may not be something that they want to be restored back to if they have generations of alcohol abuses and things like that. So reentry simply presupposes that one is going to get out of prison and return back to society. And the fact of the matter is 50% of our population returns back to society every year. So that's something that most people don't know. And they're going to be your neighbors and things like that. So reentry, we try to look at what we call criminogenic needs. Those things are employment, education. Right now there's no, I mean, even though they say there are compulsory for children to go to school, we know that's not necessarily true. So education in our system is mandatory for those individuals that don't have that education. And we know that education is tied to employment. So if a person does not have education, cannot read or write, then it's very difficult for employment. And then if there's a dysfunction on the family, so we look at family as number two. So you have employment, education, family, marital, social interaction. Just like in today's paper in Columbus, there was a young man that was accused of killing someone that was a business owner, and he was with his friends. And one of the friends said, "Help me, help me," and the guy took out his gun and shot him. So who you hang around with has a lot to do with how you behave sometimes. Then this whole thing of substance abuse, you know, alcohol, drugs, or even illegal drugs or legal drugs that are used in an illegal manner that affects society. Then what are the community functionings, personal and emotional, and attitude. So we look at those things, we give an assessment, and we try to come up what we call a reentry accountability plan, or RAP. Sure. And based upon those things, we try to deal with things that the society or their parents or their lifestyle didn't deal with in the first place. Because a lot of times people think that we have this human washing machine where we put people inside the prison system and they come out better. We try to do that, but the fact of the matter is people are people.
That's how is that staff then? What people do the supervision? Or is it... Is it required supervision? I mean,
that's an interesting question in the state of Ohio, because there are so many different levels. You have community supervision, then you have the old parole. It depends on when they came in, based upon the different laws, the Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 2. So there are most of our people get out and there is no community supervision. I mean, we have a lot of people that get out and that's the end of their sentence. They just do what we call a flat time or indefinite sentence. Then those that do have supervision, they're supervised by parole or probation officers.
Jeff, I wanted to ask a question. If someone is released and then they do good and they get off parole and commit a crime after that, what does that mean?
That increases recidivism, but they go under a new sentence. So if they were still on paper, they can reinstate the sentence. But if they're not on paper, they're completely off parole, then it would be like a new case.
Okay.
We would give them a new number.
Okay. So if they were going to do like 50 years for a mole case, but once they get off parole, that it no longer applies.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like it takes a heck of a bit of gumption and motivation and concern to make reentry work, doesn't it? I mean, and
reentry is a philosophy. So I always tell people that, because a lot of people think of reentry as a program, but it's actually a philosophy. And the philosophy is trying to figure out and do those things that can prepare a person for release. That's the most important thing. That involves the family. You know, if a person doesn't know how to be a parent, then we try to get them in the parenting class. If a person has problems with substances or whatever, we try to create programs that we can measure that would allow that person to work on that, because in most instances, we all know that when a person gets out, in the community, then there are a lot of distractors that that the person may not even be interested in changing their way of life or way of thinking unless there's something that grabs their attention.
You know, there's a great story. I should have pulled it out tonight, and I forgot to do it. I thought about it last week, but of the guy in New York that runs the big restaurant that only hires ex-offenders. Have you heard about him? New York Times did a nice story.
Is he a baker?
Yeah, he's a baker.
Right, I saw that piece on him.
Uh-huh.
He actually learned how to bake in prison.
Yes, and boy, yeah. He's making a fortune, I'm told.
Right, and he's only hiring ex-offenders. Jeff, have you heard about, and it's another guy in Los Angeles that did the same thing, but that guy has more of a restaurant.
Right, and I'm aware of the TEACH program, which is in Columbus, Ohio, ran by John Gregory, and it's located on Broad and Parsons, and they work with ex-offenders to get them trained to get CDLs and things like that, to work with Rumsky, the trash, you know, pickup places. He just sent me a magazine. I meet with him every once in a while. You know, some other places, Giant Eagle and McDonald's, they hire ex-offenders. There are a lot of people that hire ex-offenders, but, of course, even in hiring an ex-offender, one would still have to have the same work ethics that allow them to success, you know, for success.
And we have a young man in Cleveland that learned Braille while he was incarcerated.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now he has a company where he translates literature into Braille, and he hires ex-offenders. So there are some...
And editorial companies, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Have any of the large corporations stepped out in front on this issue and tried to do something about it? I imagine unions fight them a little too, don't they?
Well, for the most part, there's it's kind of interesting. I guess I won't be as controversial, but the unions do not fight ex-offenders getting jobs. In fact, a lot of people that some people that commit crimes are former union members. They may have a trade, or you know, they may be a preacher, they may be a pastor. I mean, there's many people that commit crimes, but our job is to try to find out a way to keep them out of prison, not to keep them in prison. A lot of people, for some strange reason, they believe that corrections people want to keep people inside prisons, but that's not true.
I remember a line from the movie, The Shawshank Redemption, when he said they were talking in prison about having hope, and Morgan Freeman turned to the young man and he said, "Hope is a dangerous thing in here." And so I thought, well, what if we were able to release some hope for a better life? I had an opportunity the other day to speak to young people that are incarcerated here in Cleveland Juveniles. And I mind you that none of them probably ever hear anyone say, "I love you." Now, I understand these are dangerous little criminals, but love is a powerful thing. I'm sorry, I just believe it, that if somebody just said it repetitively to these individuals while they were young, it might make a difference in the outcome in their lives.
Well, I think we're clearly seeing how you've done so well, given what you've experienced. And do you have rough times about this still?
Actually, I do every day. Yesterday was my daughter's birthday. Jeff, I didn't even tell you this. She would have been 37. And someone asked me, I got a lot of calls yesterday, and they were like, "Well, how are you doing? How are you doing? Do you miss her? Do you ever wonder what she would be like?" And I said to them, in actuality, no, I don't any longer, because I understand there's nothing I can do about that. She'll always be 14 in my mind, and to be wishing that she was still here is almost a mute issue. But there are some days, believe me, when I wake up, I'm surprised, because it's still very heavy on your heart. It's something that does not ever go away. So to the people who might be listening who commit the violent acts, they need to know that not only do they take away the life of that person they murdered, but they really take away the lives of the family members as well, because personally, my life will never be the same, and I don't know if that's good or bad or ugly. It just is. So the reason that I work with the inmates The reason that I try to give them motivation and hope is to stop this cycle of endless pain. And the only way I think we can do that is from the ground up. We have to show them the pain and show them the emotions and render ourselves vulnerable. You know, a lot of times when people hear about the work that I do, they think I'm some superwoman. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm a human being. I have feelings and flesh and blood, and I don't want to be this vulnerable, but someone has to do it.
How do folks get a hold of your book, Yvonne?
Well, I have a website.
Okay.
And it is www.yvonne, that's Yvonne, Poynter, Pointer.com. And since Jeff gave his phone number out already, people can contact me through Jeff because we speak on a regular basis.
Great.
Especially if they want to bring me to their area to speak about victimization, how it relates to reentry, and or speak to inmates.
We like to get you to some places that I know of, so we'll be in touch here in the future. So, Jeff, any concluding remarks here as we come near the end?
Well, I just say that anyone's idea is a good idea. This is a societal problem; it's not a employee problem. So, it would be always good. Or if someone has an idea, like the young lady that called earlier, I can hear her pain and frustration. I hear it a lot. That's why I'm kind of glad that I do work with people, and it's kind of a blessing to be able to have a job where I can work with people. But the idea is to come with something on the table so that we can all come up with some way to resolve this. We do need legislation to stop collateral sanctions. You know, we need some way to say to the legislators that we definitely need to be able to expunge some records. Everybody's not going to get a clemency. Everybody's not going to get all of their records expunged. So we got to. But at the same time, there are going to be people in society that have made a mistake, that have done a crime, and they're paid for their crime. And now we have to go on with life. And we're supposed to be a society of forgiving people. So, and it's very difficult because I do respect the victims. I've been a victim myself. I've had family members that have been victimized by domestic abuse, and I'm not saying those things are good. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that in society, somehow we have to find a way to bring closure to what we do. And we have to find a way to restore those citizens back into society if they have been truly rehabilitated.
You know, it sounds so simplistic, but we all are in the same boat, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Like it or not, we are. Unforgiveness, I have seen unforgiveness cause families of victims to have heart attacks, to die from strokes. So it almost behooves you to let it go and to find a place in your heart where unforgiveness can enter in for your own sake. And I wanted to also say that the Department of Rehabilitation is very, very, very blessed to have people like Jeff Carson and Andrea Dean and those who have the compassion and can almost walk on both sides of the fence. They're very blessed to have them as employees.
Well, folks, this has been absolutely enjoyable tonight and useful, and I'm glad that you folks were online when Karen called to help her with her issues, and we look forward to talking with you both again, and I want to thank you very much. This is a good show, and it's recorded, and we're going to use it in some classes, too. So,
all righty.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right, we'll see you later. Good night.
All right, good night.
All right. See you next week. Good night, be careful, and keep learning, and we'll meet again for sure.
We meet again, don't know when, but I know.